And I'm Redbeard, and in the very crowded, out of control room this afternoon, we've got a lot of smiling faces, and of course, they're all headed up by Joe Satriani. Joe, can you even? I know you got so much gear to get around. Can you?
I'm here.
Are you there?
How you doing?
I'm doing good. How was the Thai food?
It was delicious.
You have. We were talking with the members of your band and your sound engineer. I'm impressed with how you're working. You guys are working hard. I'm told that you've already done a live radio show interview performance already this morning.
That's right, yeah.
You were out shaking hands and kissing babies for lunchtime, right? Here you are with the band to grace us and perform for us live. Mm-hmm. You've got an in-store coming up, and then you play a gig tonight. When does anybody sleep? Sleep when you're dead.
Well, wake up, Stu. Wake up.
April. Well, I want to say for the record and publicly that a lot of people think that when you sell as many albums as Joe Satriani has sold, when you have the rep that you have, when you grace as many album covers and been interviewed and featured as many places around the world, that you probably don't have to sing for your supper, don't have to work. You want to maybe straighten some folks out
sing
about
for us, Joe.
I did it my way.
We just love to play, you know. I love playing. I love writing. I like making records. And I try to take advantage of every opportunity that comes my way. You know, no matter who it is, what it is, where it is, you know. If it seems interesting to me, then I'll jump on it, you know.
There's only so much in-room entertainment you can do.
Only so much cable you can watch in the hotel, right?
That's right.
And those in-room movies and stuff like that. there's an old joke in the rock and roll world that rock and roll is hurry up and wait.
Yes.
And that the 90 minutes that you get to play really makes up for the 22 and a half hours of all this other stuff. Is that true?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, when you hit this, you forget about this stuff.
Let me get Stu in there.
Well, you know, we're actually paid to wake up and check out of a hotel and pay our schedule for 5 minutes and show up on the airport in time and not lose too many socks. And the playing is just a bonus.
How long have you and Jeff and Stu been playing together?
Jeff and I have been playing since 1979.
Jeez.
Yeah, I joined up with Stu in 87.
Well, so Jeff, you basically can't commit, can you?
No, I'm still undecided.
We have Joe Satriani and his band live here in the Out of Control Room. This new album, Crystal Planet, from Joe Satriani. And then, of course, there's a gig tonight at Trees. This is the title song. This is Crystal Planet. Joe Satriani on Q102. We'll be right back. Ooh, another furious piece of music. This time it was the title song to the new Joe Satriani album, which is called Crystal Planet. We have Joe Satriani and band here live on Q102 in the Outer Control Room. Man, you guys sound like you just formed this band, you know, in the last 6 months, and you're playing with a trio here that goes back to with Jeff, the late 70s.
Yes.
How do you keep it fresh? Where do you find the inspiration? How do you get the sparks to fly? Because they're obviously flying on this new album.
I'll tell you one thing that really worked for us as a trio was the G3 tour. We started in 96 as a trio.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but would you explain to folks what the G3 tour, what that
sure,
was
yeah.
or is?
Well, I came up with this idea to go out on tour with some really scary guitar players I thought, you know, would really give me a kick in the rear end every night. And so we went out with Steve I and Eric Johnson, and we did a show where Steve would do a set with his band. Eric did a set with his band. Stu, Jeff, and I would come out. We'd do our set. Then we'd invite the other guitar players on at the end of the night and have a big jam. And we did that for about a year and a half in the U.S. and Europe. And in between the last two or three legs of that tour, this album was written, recorded, mixed, and mastered over a period of about 12 months. And so what kept us fresh was that we'd go in, work on it, we'd go out on tour, we'd come back, we'd work on it, go out on tour, and everyone was bringing in new ideas about parts, about how to work on it, and working with producer Mike Fraser was really a great experience, too.
Yeah, that was very wise on your part, because the other things that were going on, and playing night after night, live and stuff like that, it really fired. I mean, that's what performing is all about.
Yeah,
so you could capture that and bring that back to the studio.
That's what we did, yeah. And one thing we did different with this record is that we rehearsed it like we were going to do a live show, and we were able to get through the whole album as a live unit, and then we went in and just played it. And so it was real sort of normal for us to set up every morning and just bang these songs out, always looking for some new heights to scale with the song, because we were relating to it as a live band, not as a studio band just doing overdubs. And that kept it really interesting.
We're talking with Joe Satriani live here on Q102. He's playing tonight with his band at Trees. I remember when you and I first met, and we did our first interview, gosh, about 12 years ago, mm-hmm. on that remarkable second album of yours, Surfing with the Alien. You taught me something then that I don't know is that well known now, and that is, I mean, for some like 15 years, you, Joe Satriani, were a guitar teacher before you made this commitment to be a performer. Now, I think that's fascinating, Joe, because you decided to make the leap to actually performing and recording when most performers would be thinking about teaching as like a semi-retirement thing.
I like doing things in reverse. I mean, that's something I do a lot.
But seriously, what was it that made you, first of all, let me ask you about the attraction of teaching. What was it that you found fulfilling approaching the guitar as a teacher in an academic sense, really? I mean, you did it at a university, right?
No, I never did that, no.
No?
The School of Satch, maybe. For a small fee, you can get a nice little sheepskin. But no, the reason why teaching was natural to me was because my mom was a teacher.
Oh.
My two older sisters were teachers, and there was just a lot of stuff hanging around the house, teaching materials, and
wow.
It seemed like an easy thing to do. And I had taken lessons as early as 9 years old, music lessons on the drums,
wow.
for a couple of years. So it didn't seem like a bad idea to make string money, you know, while you're trying to practice guitar. And, you know, I was just in a string of bands from when I was 14 up until, I guess, about 30 years of age, playing in lots of rock and roll bands until I signed up with Relativity Records. But the idea to leap into performing instrumental music was really part of that big accident where I started to get reviews for some avant-garde guitar music I was putting out on my own label. And eventually, Relativity said, well, are you going to tour? And I said, you know, guess what? I've never done this in front of an audience before.
Were they surprised?
Yeah.
I bet they were.
They thought I just did this every day, and I said, I've never done it in my life.
It would be an assumption that one would make, sure.
Yeah. But actually, I was in rock and roll bands with singers. That's what I did for most of my career. So that first, the first performance, actually, Stu was part of the band.
Mm-hmm. Joe sang Roller Beethoven.
I'm sorry, say again?
Yeah. Joe sang Roller Beethoven. Yeah. The Limelight in New York, right?
All those verses. What was I saying? Wow, yeah. So, I mean, that's funny. But, I mean, performing has always come naturally to me. I mean, I really like it. I get off on it. And it is the final step, the culmination, I think, of the musical experience. Because you experience it, you know, when you get the inspiration to write some music and you watch yourself play it and you think, well, now I got to share this with somebody. They got to check it out. And so when you finally get to do it night after night, it's really great.
We're talking with Joe Satriani live on Q102. I've got to ask you, you're a very modest man, but I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
Name some of the most famous guitar players who we would know. Mm-hmm. Who you instructed, who you taught to play guitar at some point.
Yeah, Kirk Hammett from Metallica took
Kirk
lessons.
Hammett from Metallica took lessons from Joe Satriani.
That's right. And Larry Lalonde from Primus.
Primus.
Steve Vai and Whitesnake and a bunch of other things. Frank Zappa.
Right.
Alex Skolnick from Testament. Dave Bryson from Counting Crows. Doug Doppler from Doug Doppled.
That is remarkable.
Yeah, yeah. And let's see, who else? I'm thinking about what's Charlie's last name? I'm forgetting his name.
Charlie Hunter,
the seven-string jazz guitar player.
Wow.
Yeah.
That you've got to take some small. It's got to cause kind of a zen smile to go across your face when you see these people doing the work that they're doing out there in the marketplace now. When you see them selling records, you see them getting Grammy Awards, you see them, the case of Metallica, just selling gazillions
of
albums and things like that.
You know? Especially when you know them, I know firsthand that Kirk is a really dedicated guitar player. He's a lover of music and guitar music. He's got great taste in guitar players. He always brought in impeccable stuff by other players to find out what was going on, how was it being done. And he had no problem gathering information in a general way and saying, you know, and being comfortable saying, okay, I'll take this home and I'll figure out what to do with it, because that's really the way I like to do it, give people choices and let them decide on their own how to apply it to their musical situation. And he's always had his own vision. He's always driven, and it shows. Yeah. You know.
We're talking with Joe Satriani. I wanted to play this earlier, and I'm going to make sure I get it on right this time. It's Jeff tells me that this is a kind of a made up title, but it's a soaring melody. Trun Drumbalin.
Trun Drumbalin. Very good.
Close enough. This is Joe Satriani from Crystal Planet. It's the only word I've gotten right all day on Q102. Joe Satriani and band from the album Crystal Planet. That is Trun Drum Belind. Close enough. I'm Red Beard. We're live on Q102, and what a thrill. We have Joe Satriani along with Jeff Campitelli on drums and Stuart Hamm on bass to perform live with Joe. And we're gonna turn these, let the horses out of the barnyard. What are you going to play for us first, Joe?
We got a song called Ceremony. We'll be right back.
as they said in the movie The Mask, smoking. That is, that's wonderful. Now hold on, Jeff, don't leave. I want to make sure everybody gets identified here. Of course, that was Stuart Hamm on the bass, Jeff Campitelli on the drums, and Joe Satriani playing guitar live on Q102. And Jeff, nobody's going to believe that was live. I mean, it just sounds like it's right off of the Crystal Planet CD. So give me a rim shot just to let them know that you're really, this is the way it's done. Nice. Job. Boy, that sounds great. We've got Joe Satch there pulling a little bit on the cold water. Everybody relax for a second. I want to ask Joe a question. You know, over the years, throughout the albums and things like that, through the many interviews that we've done, it's very, very, very obvious that two things. You're an extraordinarily talented guitar player and musician. You're also a very modest and humble guy. And I've often wondered, they're all laughing. Yeah, they're all laughing. Boy, has he got me fooled, huh?
Oh, yeah.
You are a modest man, and I've always wanted to ask you, when that phenomenon of your second album, Surfing with the Alien, happened in 1987, and it sold over 1 million copies, and you were voted in every musician's poll as the man with the guitar, and you were on your face and your countenance graced countless musician and guitar magazines and around the country and stuff like that. How was the heat of the spotlight for you after, just on a second album, all that happening? How did you handle it? How comfortable was it for you, Joe, the person?
Well, to tell you the truth, it was great. I mean, it sure beats obscurity and poverty. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't complain for a second about that, because suddenly people were playing my music on the radio. You know, guys like yourself were sort of pioneering the record for people out there, and that's really the goal, is to get people to hear your stuff, you know. And
so there wasn't any... I got the feeling, and of course, you straightened me out. I got the feeling, though, that there's the rock and roll pop music world, and then there's a subset, and it's the guitar gunslinger, that it's very competitive in that area. And that I was wondering, after your fame with just your second album, I was wondering if you for a while there maybe felt like a marked man, where every young guitar player had to basically shoot for you as the standard to beat, kind of like in the old West.
It didn't bother me, and I would think that the main reason would be is that I had students leading up to the release of that. I was still teaching. I think Kirk Hammett was the last lesson I gave in the early 88, and by then surfing had just started to take off. And I had a lot of experience sitting down across from students who I thought would definitely go farther than me. I mean, they had better hands.
Honestly,
absolutely. And I learned that lesson when I was teaching Steve Vai when he was 12 years old. I went, wow, you know, and I was just a year ahead of him, really, in playing. I just started playing myself. But that year, allowed me to be a decent teacher for him, just to show him the things that he needed to know to start out. But after about a year and a half, 2 years, we were like comrades. We were on the same mission. And it was obvious to see the talents that he had and the strengths that he had. And it was great to see it. And you know, I got in my head that, well, there's going to be a lot of people who can play me under the table. And so for me, it was always writing songs, writing great compositions, trying to be as good as all the best that I enjoyed listening to.
I'm so glad you went there, because that's something else I wanted to talk to you about this afternoon. And that was... Do you find people like me, who aren't musicians, we love music and rock music, and we know what we like and we know what we don't like. Do we put you in the position, and others like you, as a one-trick pony, and that is a guitar player, when actually, I mean, you compose these songs. If you didn't, you know, you'd have to be in somebody else's band, wouldn't you?
So
your melodic compositional abilities, for some reason, at least maybe in your circle of true musicians, maybe it's very aware. But I think so many of us in the you know, flashy rock world of looking at magazine covers and things like that, or concerts and stuff like that, maybe forget that you're a composer. You've got to be.
Yeah, you have to be to survive. Yeah, you can. You know, maybe you can get one record out just on, let's say, some unusual finger technique,
right,
or sound or pedal, whatever.
Right.
But after that, you know, a lot of musicians come and go that use that as the formula for their success.
And they,
you know,
do get pigeonholed or painted into a corner,
yeah,
because of that. Yeah,
I wouldn't see how they would get off on playing their acts if that's the way that they did it every day, you know, relied on a sound or a flashy technique, you know, whether it's speed or something unusual. For me, the greatest thing is writing the song and then following it through to its conclusion, which is performing it, like right here in a studio or in front of a live audience at a theater somewhere. To me, that's a great journey, and I just try to do that over and over as much as I can.
We're talking with and listening to Joe Satriani and Jeff Campitelli on drums and Stuart Hamm on bass. We're going to let the guys take a breather for a second while we listen to another great melody from Crystal Planet, the new Joe Satriani album. This is called Lights of Heaven.
We'll be right back.
like we said, he's got to compose them before he can play them with the band. Nice melody. That's called Lights of Heaven. It's on the new Joe Satriani album, Crystal Planet. Joe, I saw you kind of switching some equipment around and stuff like that. You and the guys got another one in you?
Sure. We'd like to play a song called House Full of Bullets.
This is Joe Satriani, Jeff Campitelli, Stuart Hamm, live on Q102. Guys?
One, two, three.
Oh, my. I think we definitely busted a move into a groove right there. Boy, that was nice. That was really sweet.
Yeah.
What was that, Joe?
We call that one House Full of Bullets.
That is Joe Satriani, Jeff Campitelli on drums, and Stuart Hamm on bass live in the Out of Control Room here at Q102. Just think what they can do with a big PA and all that sound at Trees tonight. Don't miss this. This is going to be great. And, of course, Joe Satriani will meet you at Blockbuster Music at Greenville and Lover's Lane around 7 o'clock. And when you pick up a copy of this new album, which is Crystal Planet, if you ask nice, he's a very nice man. I'm sure he'll autograph it for you, and it'd be something certainly special for you. Thank you so much for doing this. This is great.
Oh, this is our pleasure, man.
This is really nice. Before I let you go, you know, it's funny. Every 3-4 years in the music business, there's a new flavor of the month. You know, there's a new trend that supposedly changes everything and dismisses everything that went before it, and it's always kind of silly when you see it being marketed and people putting it that way, but I guess it's inevitable that some people will. Let's talk about true alternative, and let's talk about true indie credibility. Your first album, 1985.
Yeah, 80, probably 84, the Joe Satriani EP that I put out on Rubina Records,
right.
Yeah.
Now, who is Rubina Records? And let's talk about indie cred.
I'm not only a client, I'm also the president of the company. Yes, my wife Rubina is the vice president, or was the vice president of the company, before we fired each other, and... I just started a record company in my living room in Berkeley, California, just as a way to release this avant-garde EP of guitar tunes. And it was a really good learning experience from a business side because, you know, I thought, well, you know, I know how to make weird noises on the guitar and write really strange songs, but how do you sell it to... a bunch of record stores around town, and right. How do you get it in the hands of journalists and all that kind of stuff? So I bought a book, believe it or not, by Nola Press about how to start your own business, and I just did it page by page and started a record company, a publishing company, and figured out a way to press some records up, and that's really where it started. And it was completely alternative. That's about as alternative as you can get.
That's about as alternative and out there and hanging your fanny out there on a limb as you can get. There's a pretty famous story in the biz about how you financed making that first Joe Satriani album.
Oh, that thing. Actually, you know, that was the second record.
Okay.
Because the first one was just a guitar, and I was doing weird things with it. But I knew for the next record, I wanted to have a bass. I wanted to have drums and stuff like that.
Oh, get fancy.
It gets fancy. And I had to pay Jeff Campitelli, world-class drummer.
Why?
You pay him? Wait a minute.
So I tried to get what they call a spec deal, you know, where you go around, you impress a bunch of people at studios, and they say, we'll front you the money in the studio time, and then you give us a piece of the action when the record does well. Well, they all said, you're crazy. No one makes records like this. So, like divine intervention, in the mail, unsolicited, came a free credit card. Oh, I shouldn't say free. A credit card came. Dear Mr. Satriani, because of your good standing, that kind of stuff, they sent me a credit card for $5,000, and it had checks in it, so you could prepay people. So I met with John Cuneberti, my engineer at the time, and I said, well, if I give everybody the money up front, will they give me a reduced rate? And they cut the deal was like I got a studio time cut in half because everybody needed money.
Sure.
And I just prepaid everybody.
Wow.
I finished the record, which was Not of the Earth, and took about a year and a half before when I was done with it till Relativity released it. And by then I had joined the Greg Kinn Band, and they'd really saved me by getting me into their band. The money I made doing that record paid off the credit card debt because I was sitting there with that $5,000 debt and I couldn't pay it off, you know.
Wow.
And just made it. Like
that is such a great story. It is such a Cinderella story. And then on your second full blown album, of course, you sell more than a million copies worldwide.
Oh yeah, it's over 2 million copies.
It's over
worldwide.
2 million now.
Yeah.
You know, So that's a great story, and I appreciate you sharing it with us.
That's the American dream.
It is. It really is the American dream. And obviously, you're still living yours because you're still smiling year to year. We're talking with Joe Satriani live on Q102. My last thing is, are you aware of this weekend, the I think it's the 21st year now for the Greater Southwest Guitar Show is coming up this weekend. Can you feel it in your wallet, guys? Can you feel that twinge?
It's getting lighter and lighter.
The wallet's getting lighter and lighter.
Yeah.
It's an annual event that's been going on now for a couple of decades. And I'm told this thing is one of the biggest, if not the biggest guitar show. Like,
why do you think we're leaving tomorrow? they plan these tours out for a reason.
Well, we'll certainly think of you when we go. Would you, Joe, would you say that for someone who doesn't play, for someone who doesn't make music but is a fan of music, is there a reason to go to something like a guitar show if you don't play it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Why?
Music. It's just music, you know. Mm-hmm. And guitar just happens to be the instrument at that show that's focused on. But
what about the colors and the shapes and the designs? It always reminds me of racing. I tell people that they should go to like a drag race once in their life or a NASCAR event, even if you're not interested in racing, just because the colors and the sounds are so vibrant and the stimuli is out of this world. Yeah. And I don't play a note of anything, but some of the most beautiful things I've ever seen, some of the most curvaceous things, and some of the wildest colors I've ever seen have been on bodies of guitars.
Yeah, I'd say ever since the 50s, you know, the cars and the guitars have evolved almost the same way. And you get some of the stranger guitar designs in the late 50s, like when the cars were really getting weird with the big fins and the holes in the side.
Yeah, that's true.
And you had weird guitars like the Modern and the Flying V and stuff like that. But yeah, there's a great amount of innovation in the aesthetic quality of the guitar. A lot of brilliant artists contribute to it. Like this guitar here that I'm playing today,
that's a wild design. I'm not even going to try to describe it, but
well,
it's
this
wild.
Is a basic JS1 Ibanez guitar. But my friend Donnie Hunt painted about 200 of these before he passed away,
and
he claimed that in a previous life. He was tied to a stake and drugged and had to watch the people being cut up and thrown into a pit. That's a wonderful story by the way.
It's just a great story. This is the family hour.
But this is why he painted stuff like this. And this is everything was one of a kind. Everything had a different story on it. The story in this is pretty scary looking, but it's basically skulls and bones. But it's not the usual skull and crossbones.
No, it's beautiful. It's a work of art. It's
and he painted everything, jackets and phones and walls and houses and stuff like that. But there are a lot of artists that are attracted to the instrument because there are a lot of people standing around the world playing these things in front of cameras and thousands of people. So it's a great little place to put art, you know. Mm. And the shapes are so varied, you know.
Wow. We've been talking and listening to Joe Satriani, Jeff Campitelli, and Stuart Hamm. I want to also thank an old Memphis boy, Doug Nightwine, for doing the great sound mix. Thanks, Doug. Good to see
you.
Good to have somebody from the cradle of rock and roll keeping it all together. I'm going to wrap up with Raspberry Jam Delta V. This is from Crystal Planet, Joe Satriani.